Hey, Sammy Hagar here, looking for John.
Hey, Sammy Hagar here. This is John Clay Wolf. How are you?
Well, I'm doing good. John Clay Wolf. What's with the three names?
I was John Clay growing up. I think my mom had a crush on a dude named Clayton, is what my dad said. I've got four names, man. It's John Clayton Ferguson Wolf. And then I ditched it to John Wolf. And then when I got on radio, there's too many John Wolfs out there. So I brought the Clay back so people could find me.
Well, damn, that's a great explanation.
You got any more fucking questions, motherfucker?
Well, no, I think this interview, we're done. That's all I needed to know. Damn, come on, John, what are we going to talk about here?
Okay, so we're going to plug your Texas tour. And
yeah.
I'm in Dallas. Now, we're on KLOS. I'll be in California in the morning. I offered to give y'all a ride back, but I got a Falcon. He said that you got your own plane. So what do you fly?
Challenger 300.
Mm-hmm.
I don't fly in it. I ride in it.
I
mean, I don't fly it. Let me tell you something. I wouldn't want to be a pilot. My pilots always say, hey, Sammy, come on up in front and sit, you know, on a long trip or something, you know, and look at the beautiful night sky. And I'm going, I don't even want to sit up in that front up there, man. That's spooky stuff for me.
I've got about 2,000 hours as a pilot. I flew myself forever. And then when I got that jet, I have absolutely zero interest in ever flying it.
Yeah, it's just there you go.
Too much going on. It's going too fast. The amount of training you'd have to do.
Yeah, and the responsibility. You can't drink. Oh, man, I sit in the back, pour myself a nice cocktail, and rely on those pilots pretty heavy. But honestly, God, I, without getting too paranoid about the whole thing, I can't even think about it when I'm on an airplane. I'm afraid of the dark, man. I'm the biggest chicken in the world. But, man, when I think about what's really happening in that thing, you know, like there's no brakes. It's like every time you land, it's a controlled crash. You know what I mean? It's, we got this under control. Don't worry. We're, you know, just trying to get it on the ground.
You're just waiting to hear those thrust reversers come out. And go. That's when you know the brakes are coming.
And then you say, "Amen." You know, say, so "Bless yourself and go about your thing."
When you land in Mexico, have you ever had an issue or coming or going in private with the border or the customs?
You know, the border patrols. I fly in and out of the same places now.
Mm-hmm.
So the airport in Cabo San Lucas is called Sammy. It's nicknamed Sammy Hagar International. So when I pull into there for, you know, the last 10 years or so, they have this big sign up with a big picture of me saying, welcome to Sammy Hagar International. They have big speakers outside, and they play one of my records. I'm dead serious. And they wheel out a cart with my tequila on it and beers and sodas and, you know, different things for my people. And we don't even have to go through customs. They take one person, the pilot or whoever wants to do it. You go inside and you push a button. And if it turns red, they say, push it again. And you push it again and it turns green. They say, okay. They load up my cars and I leave. It's funnier than shit. I mean, it blows people's minds.
No.
I bring Toby Keith flies into the same airport, and they do the same thing for him, but they still got my picture up there, and he's always going, Sambo, he goes, this shit's going to change, man. I'm going to have to change airports, you know. Anyway.
I mean, I've heard of hearing having the deal fucking wired up, but that sounds ridiculous.
It is. And then when I come back, we always go to the same airport as well, where they have customs, and they know me and know my plane, and they come on the plane and they say, everybody okay? We're okay. You guys ain't bringing nothing this time. No, just this big old bag of heroin here and this cocaine. That's all we have, you know.
I wrote a couple of questions that I wanted to hit, and we're in the vein of it, so I'll do it right now. And he's recording this. We can edit it up. But what is the worst part of being a star? And I would not, you're so used to it by now, it's probably that question's better in the 80s.
Yeah, because quite honestly, when you're a more current star, there's more intensity from the fans. And to me, back then, it was difficult to go to like a shopping mall. Like Christmas time, I need to go buy my kids and my wife a Christmas present, you know? And you just don't feel comfortable in a crowd when people start recognizing you. And back in the old days, because I was a loudmouth rock star, you know what I mean? I was kind of flamboyant a little bit, not too much, but not like some, but they would expect you to be, you know, that guy. Like, you know, you expect, you go, hey, motherfucker, what's happening? You know?
Right.
And you don't do that. And they go, and like, wow, man, you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. I'm normal. I'm just this guy, you know, going shopping. But nowadays, there is no downside to being Sammy Hagar.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy every single minute of... You get, you know, you don't have to wait in the line. If you call somebody and say, hey, Sammy Hagar's coming, and they say, okay, you know, time to just do this, to do that. Your restaurant, I'm sorry, we're full at 5:30, you know, and we can't take any more reservations. Well, it's Sammy Hagar, and they say, oh, just tell Sammy to come on in, man, whenever you want.
Sure.
You know what I mean? That stuff is fucking awesome, and I don't care what anyone says, it's awesome. And, you know, and like I said, I don't have, like, 14-year-old girls chasing me down the street anymore.
Sure.
Thank God, because I would like that. No.
Dude, I'm nothing. I mean, I'm a radio personality. I mean, so I have a million listeners. But I've had some moments where I came out of the studio and got in my car. Guy's sitting there. He's like, John Clay? I'm like, yeah. And he's, you know... starts using some of my dialogue, and he scared me, you know? And we start talking, and I'm like, what's up, man? He's like, well, I just got out of prison, and I've been listening to you every Saturday for the past 7 years. I'm like, whoa. And I was, you know, I just wanted to come meet you and tell you how you helped me through those times. And that's some spooky shit.
Yeah, sometimes there is every now and then a scary type fan. You know, I get those letters too every now and then at my office. Goes, let's file this one.
You
know? Okay, oh, yeah, I hear it. But no, I'm my fans are cool. You know, they love me and they let me know it. And because I'm an elder now, you know, it's like it's a lot more mellow because people that have been following me for like 30 and 40 years, and they're just kind of like they feel like they're. Actually your friend, you know, it's
sure.
Not so much worship. And it's odd to me to be in a crowd. Like I just did the Raiders game in Las Vegas at this new stadium, the Legion Stadium. So there were 60,000 people there, and at halftime they asked me if I'd come in and sing a couple songs, like Right Now and what else? One Way to Rock, right? So they had a 17-piece band and all this stuff. So I just walked in and said, yeah, play it in the right key. You know the song. We'll just do it to like the record. Okay, great. Walked. But the stage was in the middle, not on the ground in the middle of where they play football. It was in the middle of the bleachers. And when I came out, it's like everybody started rushing up to
right.
that area. So when I came off, there was about 4,000 people piled into the back between me and the elevators and had all the security in the world. And that feels weird to me. Like, you know, honestly, I don't get it when people start getting riled up, you know, because it was kind of a surprise. So they got kind of too excited, and it was like a little bit scary. And I posted it on my Instagram, if you look at a couple Instagrams ago. It's like, you know, trying to get through the crowd. You know, you feel like, ooh, you got to be cool. You don't want to piss somebody off.
When a guy kills John Lennon just to get famous? You
got
to remember
go.
It. You got to remember
There you
it.
Go. So I don't like being in a big-ass crowd like that, a victim. But other than that, you know, mind my own business, go on stage, do my thing, sneak out the back door, all good. And I don't mind a few people recognize me on the street, come up and shake my hand. I don't like it when I'm taking a piss. So you know what I mean?
Sure.
You sit in the bathroom holding your
dude,
thing.
I had
and
that
guy
happen.
Next to you is putting his hand out saying, you know, I want to shake your hand. I'm going, not what? Right now. I got something else to shake.
I know I sing about right now, but not now, homeboy. Now, I'm sitting in a pisser. There's two guys flanking on either side. Both of them are fans of the deal. They start talking to me. I was like, this is, I cannot imagine what it's like to be you. I get a touch of it. And it anyway, there's plenty of perks. I mean, my question was, you know, what's the worst part? I can imagine what the best part is. But speaking of Sammy saying that he likes smaller crowds, that's why they're doing this Texas tour. And they're in smaller venues. They're starting.
Well,
last night we did Billy Bob's, and you kicked ass. That was so awesome.
Well, the idea isn't why I'm playing the small venues. I'm playing the small venues because I'm doing this little party. This is really all about my new Sammy's Beach Bar cocktails. These are sparkling rum cocktails. And if you look at that business, the reason I started doing it was when COVID happened. I was bored to death. And so I'm looking at these canned cocktails that my kids, well, they're not kids, but, you know, my 22 and 25 year old daughter are bringing into the house with their friends, and they're drinking, and I'm tasting. I'm going, this is crap. So that's, you know, I knew I could make something better. So I started making those cocktails. I got nothing to do. Said, let's use my rum. Let's kick it up. We don't want to have a beer base. I don't like burping beer, you know, with a flavor to it. So I came up with these four flavors that worked great with my rum, and I worked on it for a year. By the time I came out, you know, the COVID thing's about to be over. So I'm going, wow, now I got to go out and figure out how I'm going to promote this stuff, because it became so huge. It's the biggest growing thing in the spirits world, or in the liquor world, since freaking, I guess, since they invented vodka, you know? And it's like, I'm jumped in the middle of it, and these big other companies are spending, you know, $40-50 million a year launching their brands. And I'm going, man, I ain't going to do that. I'm doing this by myself. I own it. I invented it. It's all my money. I don't have big investors and all this kind of stuff, or a big, giant, you know, 50,000 people working for me.
Sure.
So I'm going, how am I going to promote this stuff and get in the game now? Because it's gotten so big. I want to make some noise. So is what I did, John. Is it, here's her, Sammy, the big brain on Sammy. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm going to go and play little, you know, not clubs, but little theaters around in a state where I'm going to launch it. I just did it in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. I did a rooftop concert. Then I did a residency at a 900-seat room. I did 3 weekends and sold them out in 5 minutes and launched my brand in Nevada. And it took off. It's like it's doing great. So now I'm going to do the same thing in Texas, because it's only in Texas, California, and Nevada where I'm launching a brand. So long story short, that's why I'm doing it. And I love playing like the Cabo Wabo for 1,000 people, or for, you know, 1,500 people. These places, other than Billy Bob's. Billy Bob's is the biggest one. It holds like 5,000. But the other ones are, you know, 1,200, 1,500 seats, whatever they are, a couple thousand. And I'm throwing these parties. It's really like what I do in Cabo. I get on stage with my band. We get drunk together with the crowd, and we play a bunch of damn songs. See, that's how I can make noise. For me, if let's say Bacardi, you know, said, we want to launch this brand here and we need somebody to play, they'd have to pay me $1 million to go play 4 shows for them. Absolutely. Sure. But so I don't have to pay myself. So I just pay my band, and we go out and we have fun. And it's my way of competing with the big boys. One man with 3 brands and a lot of friends. That's the way I like to put it. And I'm not, you know, I'm not a zillionaire like these guys. I mean, I got plenty of money, but not to be throwing out at a brand $40 million a year. I'd be broke pretty quick.
But at the end, it's how much do you get to keep? It's not how much you spend marketing. And if you market, use the brands that you already have, and you sell enough of it and didn't run a $50 million launch budget like major brands do, then hell, you might wind up making more money. Because if they don't hit after those big launches, you know, they just bleed the hell out. And if you're going to do that, you got to bring on venture capital people to take the risk off of it. You know how it works.
Well, damn, John, you know exactly how it works, because that's exactly it. And I don't want to do all that. I don't want partners. I don't want to borrow money to try to make money with money, you know, like that. No, I love making these brands, and I made one that's better than the other ones. That's the only reason why I did it. Everybody's, I'm a wine guy. Everybody goes, what's your favorite wine? Well, I like DRCs. I like, you know, Vega Sicilia is one of my favorite wines in the world. You know, I like Contorno Barolos and blah, blah, blah. And people go, wow, why don't you make wine? You know a lot about it. I said, because I can't make wine that good. These guys know what the hell they're doing. For hundreds of years, they've been doing this, you know. So I don't get in any business that I can't do better in. And that's the way I feel about my music. And that's the way I feel about my spirits brands. I think I have the best ones on the market. And I think that I'm one of the great singers in the world. And I'll stand up like Snoop Dogg did the other night and said, I want to thank me for doing it. And I want to thank me for believing in myself. And I want to thank me. Well, I'm not quite going to go that far.
Hey, Bob, I thought Sammy Hagar was calling and not Ted Nugent.
Ted's my buddy, man. I got nothing against Ted except for he just too crazy and too radical. I say, Ted, calm down. Can you just move over a little bit closer to the middle just for your buddies here so I can hang out with you and not get ridiculed by those other guys?
Let's get this brand down, because we haven't got it yet. Sammy's Beach Bar Cocktail, and where do they go to get it?
Well, I think, you know, Specs has it, and Western?
All the big brand liquor stores?
Yeah, the big brand liquor stores, and hopefully a bunch of little mom and pops, too. You see, that's the other thing. I really love when I go into an independent store and I have a fan from, so the guy's, oh man, the guy owns this liquor store, and he goes, man, I saw you at the Texas Jam, man, so I, you know, I carry your booze. And I'm going, that's awesome. You know, to me, that's what I mean by one man, three brands, and a lot of friends. That, you know, that's the way I can do it and compete with the big boys, you know, now, with the big old conglomerates.
Speaking
you know?
Of, now, you sold, I listened to that Howard Stern interview you did about, was it 10 years ago when you went pretty deep
into
all
the
past? Yeah,
I've done about three of them, yeah. But
I could have done
that. Well, you mean when I first sold the tequila?
Yeah, yeah. So did you, was that 10 years ago, roughly?
It's about 13.
So how long was the non-compete?
7 years.
All right.
Boom.
I figured that's what was going on. But did you have to stay all the way out of the tequila business for life?
Yeah, I had to stay out of tequila, so I made rum. I made Sammy's Beach Bar rum, and I've had that for about 7 years. And then I used that rum to make my cocktails. And then I started making tequila about 3 or 4 years ago with Santo Tequila, with Guy Fieri's my partner on that. And, you know, Guy is like... This guy came to me when I sold the brand 13 years ago. We were buddies, and he wasn't a huge star then, but you know he was doing pretty good. And he goes, Sammy, did you sell that for what I heard you say? Yes, I did. He goes, dude, if you ever do that again, I want to be your partner. I said, okay. I said, but I can't because I got a non-compete. So I went about my business, and then I started making Santo Tequila. Mezcala, first one I made, I blended tequila with mezcal and kind of toned it down a little bit so it don't taste like an ashtray. And it mixes better with oranges and things like that. So long story short, he calls me, hey, I thought you was going to be your partner. I said, oh, I forgot. You want to be my partner? This is the kind of guy I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to be your partner. What I said, well, here's how much I got in. How much do you want it?
Sure.
And he goes, I'd like to be equal partners with you. Okay, shake hands. Boom, boom, boom. Here, I need this much money because that's how much I've spent so far. And, I mean, it was just like that. Boom, done. And he's the best partner in the world. That guy is like a walking friggin' billboard, man. He's the greatest. Do you know Guy? Have you ever met him?
I've never met him. I watched, you know, some of the TV shows. But I love stories like that where people actually do what they say they're going to do.
Yeah.
And we shake hands. And then y'all get it to the lawyers, and the lawyers probably started muddying it up, and y'all had to both call them and say, hey, lighten up. We're doing this. Don't overwrite it.
John, you're cracking me up. You know all about this. Exactly what happened. Of course, the lawyers start saying, well, you don't want to give away this. And you started it. No, you should be. You know, and my lawyers and his lawyers, oh, he's trying to take advantage.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we threw them out, and we got it done. But, Guy, you should get Guy on your show. He is the coolest dude. He is exactly who, you see him on TV. That is no act. I swear to God, I've Zoomed with him at 8 o'clock in the morning, and he's got his get up on. He's got his bling, his big old chains around his neck, his hair all spiked up, and wearing his shades. And I'm going, did you go to bed last night?
Well, listening to you now, I'm kind of getting a little feel for you. And it's not, you know, that Stern stuff was deep. I listened to a while back, but it was all music based. But what I'm hearing, you got a lot of entrepreneur in you. And so when you put yourself back before Red Rocker, when you were getting going, was it money or fame that was the driving force? Not that either one of them was bad. You know, the old greed is good. But, I mean, something was driving it.
No. It's fame. I was a poor kid. I grew up. I'm telling you, I was damn near homeless. We slept in a car many times. And during the summer, we would go camping. Because my father was an abusive father to my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And she would have to grab the kids and throw in the back of a car, and we'd take off. And we didn't have any money or any place to live. And we'd go pick fruit and stuff during the summer. My mom was the coolest, hardest working, greatest lady ever lived on this planet. And so when I finally had a guitar in my hand, finally, she bought a guitar with me by doing ironings for people and cleaning houses.
Mm-hmm.
So she bought me my first guitar. And when I had a guitar in my hand, I said, I'm going to be somebody. I didn't even think about being rich. I mean, I didn't even know what rich was because I was that poor. I never had money, so I didn't know what it would be like having money. So I really just wanted to be famous. I wanted to be somebody.
You know why you wanted to be famous? Because, I'll tell you why, because you wanted security. You needed security, and that's why you have plenty of money, obviously, and you're still doing this. Because that poor son of a bitch is still back there in the back of your brain, and it scares you.
He sure is, man. I tell people all the time, I know exactly where I came from. I am not who I am today. I am who I was then and who I am today. That's how I've grown that line from there to there. I'm all of that. I am not just here today. And I try to stay in touch with that. My mother made me humble. I keep myself humble. You know, my father was from Texas. I was raised like a Texan. My wife's a Texan. I've got more of the South in me, that kind of a vibe, than any.
That's where you learn how to work.
Multi-millionaire. It don't mean nothing to me. Money, I give most of my money away, and I put it in trust for my kids, and I do tons of charity work. Yeah, I'm just not money-driven. People go, how much money do you need? I said, I don't need money. It's not what I'm doing here. I love making products that my fans can enjoy and we can get together. It's kind of like in the old days, you know, when the San Francisco scene, when everybody was smoking weed or taking acid, you'd go to a Grateful Dead show, you know, and you in the Fillmore, and everybody was on the same drug. And it would be such an event. It would be so, it would be like a spiritual thing. Well, I learned about that in Cabo Wabo. When I built the Cabo Wabo and I threw my birthday bash down there every year and still do, it would be like everybody would be high on tequila. Mm-hmm. And then it was my tequila, no less. So, you know, the one that I like made and like to drink.
How do you say Haight Ashbury in Spanish?
You know what? I'm going to find out, you fucker. I'm going to find out how to say that, because that's a funny thing. This is like the Cabo Wabo is really the Haight Ashbury of Cabo's the Haight Ashbury of Mexico. But everyone getting on the same trip and drinking, and it's my stuff. So when you come to my shows, especially these little shows that we're doing, where I can control it, because the venue is so happy to have, you know, the Circle play in this place where we can sell 10,000 seats, and we're happy to play this little place. They're happy. So they put my booze all in there, so they make it all about it. So here's what you do. You come and you get to hear my music, and you get to drink what I drink, and hopefully if they serve food, you'll be eating tacos or something that goes with my food. That's kind of things. Hey, that's what the Cabo Wabo and all my restaurants are all about. I say, you come in, you're coming to my house now. You're going to hear the music that I like to listen to, you're going to eat the food I like to eat, and you're going to drink the drink that I prefer and have made for you and us. And that's a better experience.
No, I got it.
You agree?
No,
that's a better experience than just going to a concert.
I got another question for you, because you got my brain working. You get heavy metal and all your solo stuff, big deal, MTV. And I need to find out what a three lock box is before we hang up. But you pulled it off. You're poor. You're scared. You said, I'm going to be famous, and that's going to provide security. You get to a point that you got it, and you're like checking yourself. You're like, man, I actually did it. I'm here. I got it. And then you even keep going up. Did you get depressed because you lost that core drive of fear and kind of get survivor's guilt from, do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah. I'm the youngest of four.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you're the one.
Yeah. And
don't start crying on me now. I
took care of mom. My dad died when I was very young in the streets. He was became a homeless person, died in the freaking back of a police car, picked up in a park in the middle of the night. So that's the low mm-hmm. that I came from. But I took care of everybody. But that isn't the point. Is where the drive thing you're talking about is, it's not quite that way. I didn't ever feel guilty about losing any drive, because I really haven't. Mm-hmm. See, I like new projects. I have a new song that we just recorded, a new record with David Cobb with The Circle. And I wrote this song called Father Time. And it's got a line in there. When was the last time you did something for the first time? That's the way I've been living my life lately. I've been saying, I'm running out of things to do. I'm running out of things that I want. I don't want anything. I've got everything. I'm going, what? So without wanting something, you feel like you lost your drive. But here's the thing. Here's the secret. I wrote a song about with Van Halen, the song Dreams. Mm-hmm. It is about when you have a dream, you get it, which I did. I had a dream, and I got it. I captured it. Guess what? I got my dream. You have to live your dream. You got to take it with you. You don't capture it and then throw it aside and say, well, I want this one now.
Right.
And you go chase anything you want, but you chase it with that dream you caught. You stay in that dream. So my dream was to be what I am today, and I'll be this for the rest of my life. I will sing and play music for my people and my fans and for myself. and I will do it for the rest of my life because that was my dream, and I'm going to live it.
And for those of y'all who don't know, he's got a couple of guys, a couple of rookies with him that are playing backup. Michael Anthony, some of y'all might have heard of him. He played with Van Halen for a little bit, has a hell of a backup voice. A guy named Jason Bonham, his dad was in a cool band back in the 70s. And a Vic Johnson from the Bus Boys. You might remember Eddie Murphy riffing on them, how the Bus Boys would fuck everything. Man, when the Bus Boys come to my house, the fish stop swimming. Remember the Eddie Murphy deal?
Oh, yeah. Vic Johnson, man, he tells me more stories about doing that movie with Eddie Murphy for the Bus Boys. He said he was a cool hang, and I bet he was back in those days especially, man.
Is Jason Bonham as good of a drummer as his father?
Yes. Yes, and that's not degrading to his father.
No.
His father's the greatest drummer ever lived, and Jason has been playing drums almost twice as long as his father. Do you realize that? His father died young, 27 years old, sure, or whatever he was, and Jason is 50. So Jason has been playing longer. He's so determined, and I mean, you can't imagine how determined. You know, I know no one else that is trying to outdo their parents like Jason. Not outdo it because of disrespect, outdoing it out of respect. He wouldn't do a bad drum solo, or he wouldn't play a bad groove in his life because he feels indebted to his father's legacy. And I've never seen a kid carry on his father's legacy like this, like Jason. He's doing it better than anyone, all of them out there. You know, little Wolfie's great, but Wolfie don't want to play any of his dad's stuff. Mm-hmm. I dig that. I'm totally for that. But Jason's the opposite. Jason wants to play his dad's stuff, and he wants to play it better than his dad, and he wants to honor it. And when we play a Led Zeppelin song, brother, I turn around and I have to pinch myself. I look at him going, holy
shit. He's back. He's here.
Yeah, he sounds just like
that dominating, overpowering. He's one of the most powerful drummers ever lived.
Absolutely. So I'm happy as a snake playing with Jason. And you know, let me tell you one little hook, John. You will appreciate this because you're a deep thinker, because I already see that now with all your questions. I'm going, man, this dude's not. I thought you were just going to ask me what my favorite color was or something. You know what I mean? But he goes, Jason, you asked Alex Van Halen, who's your favorite drummer? Who do you want? John Bonham. Mm-hmm. You ask Chad Smith, John Bonham. You ask Tommy Lee, John Bonham. Everybody's John Bonham. There's some people that'll say, oh, Neil Peart. Okay, that's a different kind of drummer.
Yeah,
Neil's a bad motherfucker. He's a was a bad boy, too, no question about it. Ginger Baker, one of my favorites of all time. But everybody, John Bonham. Well, Alex Van Halen was always trying to get when the Levy Breaks drum sound, mm-hmm, on Pound Cake and all of the heavier tunes. Jason, Alex was always, we even hired one of the Led Zeppelin engineers, you know, to
try to recreate the sound.
Yeah, Alex was always wanting that drum sound. So when Jason plays Pound Cake, or right now, or any of the Van Halen stuff that we play a ton of it, it's like I'm going, now it sounds just like Alex Van Halen, because Alex was trying to sound like John. It's really a trip. It honestly, I love this band. This band is my favorite band. Denny Carmassi from Montrose, Rock Candy, trying to get that John Bonham sound. So Jason plays Rock Candy. I just feel like I'm back in Montrose. It's amazing. Every song we play, we serve it like, you know, we serve it up.
I'm a drummer, and most listeners that aren't musicians don't understand the importance of the bass player. You know, Michael Anthony has that damn high-pitched harmony that's just so gorgeous. It's that sound that you just cannot recreate. It so damn perfect. So when he left the band, you know what left with that is that voice. But with Wolfie playing the bass versus Mike playing the bass, can you tell a difference as the lead singer in the way that it's the music's that those bass lines are they're pushing you. It's your lead.
Well, I'll tell you the difference between when Michael Anthony is playing with anybody else. Mikey plays really hard, and it's like Jason. Jason plays drums really hard. If someone sits in on Jason's drum kit, I got to look at the monitor guy and say, turn it up. When Mona, my ex, well, she's still my bass player. Whenever I use the Wobbles, my ultimate party band is the Wobbles, you know, the Circle's more serious band. When Mona would come and sit, like when we did the residency in Vegas, I brought Mona and Bro from the Wobbles to come and sit in so we could do those old crazy party tunes, you know, like Everybody Must Get Stoned and all those kind of songs. So when she starts playing bass, I got to do too. I got to look at the guy and say, turn her up, man, turn her up.
Right.
Mikey is just powerful, and no one can sing like him. That guy, I can hit the highest note I can hit, and I can get up there, and that sucker will go above me and hit the third, and if he wants to, he'll hit the fifth. And I'm going, holy crap. And it just sounds, it sounds so magic. You know, those Van Halen harmonies, even before I was in the band, it's all Mikey. I mean, he made that sound.
That sound, yeah.
Yeah. Listen to this, you know, on top, you know, of the
I'm
world.
I'm sitting here listening. I'm looking at this picture now, and I'm thinking about this. I didn't before we got on. I mean, not to kiss your ass, but it's kind of a super group here, is what this is. I mean, it's closest thing to Cream since Cream, but you're not marketing it that way.
Cream, one of my favorite bands of all time. And, you know, it's about my third super group. You know, I had HSAS in years ago with Neil Schon, and then the next one was, you know, Chickenfoot was definitely a super group. You know, mm-hmm. there's no question about it. And we didn't put it together as a super group. I'll tell you a quick story what happened. We were in Jason's hometown. Jason had come to Cabo 18 years ago when he was drinking and doing everything else. And he got so wasted. He played with me a few nights. I thought, well, this guy's great, but I couldn't deal with a guy like this. I mean, he was just, he was, you know, like those rock star guys that can't stop, you know. Mm-hmm. And he went for 3 days, and then they had to beat his door down to get him out of the place. It took him straight to rehab, and he's never drank since. So he comes to a show about 10 years ago in Florida, where he lives. He came down to see my band, The Wobbles. It was David Lauser, Mona, and Vic, and myself. And we're throwing this big party with people on stage, and he says, hey, you know, hey, mate, you know, I said, you want to sit in? He's going, yeah, I want to sit in. I said, do you know Pound Cake? He said, you know, because I knew he'd know anything that Alex was copying his dad.
Sure.
And he goes, yeah. I say, how about, you know, this, how about that? I said, we'll play a couple Led Zeppelin songs, rock and roll, you know, a whole lot of love. Yeah, okay. So we're up there playing. Jason goes out in his car, orders up on his phone, orders up Pound Cake, and finished what you started. And he learned them on the
right
spot.
There.
He sat on the drums. And my regular drummer's drum set, and I'm going, wait a minute, did he set up his own drums? It sounded totally different, blew my mind. After the show, I said, you want to join my band? And he said, yeah. And he's been with me ever since.
I didn't even realize he was with you. I mean, I'm excited. And so, I mean, if you want to see one of the only supergroups touring right now, last night we saw him at Billy Bob's, and we had our company Christmas party there, and you did a great job with that, and appreciate it. That was such a fun time, dude. And Saturday, so tonight, Aztec Theater in San Antonio.
Yeah.
And Monday, and Moody in Austin, and Wednesday, House of Blues Houston. That's the Taste of Texas, Sammy Hagar and the Circle. Quick hit, what were you saying?
It's a toast to Texas, because I'm serving all my cocktails. I'm serving beach bar cocktails, beach bar rum, all three SKUs, and all my tequilas. So it's going to be like all these drinks and these parties, and we're going to just kind of, you know, change the set list every night. So, you know, what you saw last night might not be the same set tonight. If you're a lot of my fans, you know, travel, they're going to see all four shows. they're kind of like, I always say, man, people go, man, you could play 100 nights at that place. I said, yeah, we could sell like 100,000 tickets, but if I just played one night in a place, I'd only sell about 12.
Sure.
It's the same people coming every night.
Sammy, I love you coming on today. I had a blast last night at Billy Bob's. The band's awesome. I had some of your drinks. They were awesome. So nice to get to know you. And thank you for coming on the program this morning.
You're welcome. I'm not good in the morning. You know that, John, right? Like I'm on the other side of the clock my whole life. So when people ask me to do things in the morning, I usually bark back a little bit. But when they said, no, man, this is the John Clay Wolf Show. And by the way, and that's Wolf with an E. So this is the John Clay Wolfie Show.
It is, man. And they're hearing you all over the country, Florida, New York, KLOS,
woo!
All the big stations in Texas. ZPS, Houston, everywhere you're playing. KLBJ in Austin, they're all fans of yours. They're classic rock stations, and that's what we do. We're just a one time a week, because I'm busy like you during the weekdays. And they're like, man, can't you do a weekday show? I was like, it takes a lot of work. I can't. I can't run a business and do this radio thing every day. It's just impossible.
I don't run my business. See, everybody thinks I'm a businessman. No. I don't run my business. I come up to ideas. I put up all my own money. I always do everything what I want to do, blah, 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 and I find a guy to run it. And then if I can't find a guy to run it, I don't start no business without somebody to run it, because that's where the expertise comes in. You know, the other thing's creativity, but the expertise and the work of just rolling up your sleeves every day, that's a whole different thing. But, you know, John, we're going to do a proper tour next year. This is just some little thing where I'm launching my cocktails in Texas, and then we're going to do some shows in California. We're launching cocktails in California, and then we've already launched, like I said, in Las Vegas. So, you know, we'll do a proper tour next summer, amphitheater tour, and I'm sure we'll play all these same cities and a couple more, man, because... I'm like I said, my father is from Texas, my wife's from Texas, so that kind of makes me a Texan out on it.
Good times. I like you, I did a little backwards. I couldn't play guitar or sing, so I just got into business real young to get over those fears and that security thing you were talking about. And I built this thing called GiveMeTheVin.com, but the radio show, I don't want to get too deep in my bullshit, but anyway, I wrecked a motocross bike, fucking... cut my spinal cord. I'm in a wheelchair. I'm never going to walk again. And I worked my way out of it. And I was like, what the hell am I going to do from a wheelchair? And Stern was just quitting and are going to Sirius. And I'm like, let me try that. They won't know I'm in a wheelchair on the radio. And that's really how it started.
I had no idea. What a trip.
I'm walking again. I just kind of walk like a drunk now. I've got almost all the way back. and then the radio thing kept kicking, and it just kept growing, and it's been a wild ride. But the fans from the radio, when I relaunched this brand, GiveMeTheVin.com, which is my old career, you know, we turned into the largest car wholesale company in the country. We do $1.5 billion in revenue this year.
Holy shit!
Right, I'm fucking so radio DJ.
You know what, John? You and I,
we got a lot in common.
Maybe we need to start a business together. You know, it's like, oh, no, you're doing great, man. Well, congratulations. Like, I'm one of those guys that are happy for other people that are successful. Some people, they're not like that. You know, you tell them, you sit there and you tell them you're doing something. Yeah, what an asshole, man.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it's like, no, man, I ain't bragging. I'm excited, you know, and I'm excited for you. That's awesome. Man, rolling around like that, come on.
But like you said, you know, once you got over the hump, I mean, to keep it rolling, it was every day, you know, because, so, I mean, what drove me is like I saw death, kind of, what I thought was damn close to it. So I'm on borrowed time is what I feel like. So I just go like hell all the time. People, how do you keep it up? How do you do it? What do you do? I mean, my God, what are you on, drugs? No, I never do drugs because it made me crazy. I mean, it's just, I just know that, I know what it was like to be done. So I'm excited about not being done, and I'm just going to cover all the ground I can until I am done.
I learned that in 2020 from COVID when I couldn't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, I thought, man, after about 1 year of that, I went, man, when this shit is over, this cowboy is going to get up on that horse and just ride. Because, you know, it's like, wow, when you don't have it anymore, you realize how much you dig it. When you have to do it, you'd look at it like a grind sometimes. And I'm going, no, that ain't no grind. What I have going out and playing music and touring for the fans and for myself, brother, that right there is something that you don't ever
LIVIN, homeboy, living the dream. And you literally are. I mean, you are literally living the dream, and it's good to hear your spirit so high.
Yeah.
And once you find it, it just carries you.
Boom.
I appreciate it.
All right, right the hell on, John. Thank you for your time, and God bless you, man. Come on.
I'll see you soon. Love you.
Bye. Don't wanna wait till tomorrow.
Make it your present. Jesus.